Well, we have been in our Easter series. We've been talking about some comeback stories. And in the first part of our comeback stories, we looked at the story of the prodigal son returning home. And essentially, the heart of the father was that of just welcome home. Welcome home. And we learned some things from this father. And last week, we talked about crushed dreams. We looked at the life of Joseph, that God gave Joseph a dream when he was 17 years old, and he held on to that dream for 22 years until he saw it come to fruition, and all of the ups and downs of his life of experiencing crushed dreams, Joseph had an incredible comeback story. He went from being thrown into a pit, sold into slavery, he ended up in a palace, he ended up in prison, he ended up in charge of all of Egypt. And then the great comeback story was that his family, after experiencing famine, would come to Egypt where he was, and it would save Israel, and by which one day the Savior would come. It's a big old story, and we covered multiple chapters in Genesis in very short time. But if you ever want to get caught up on any message, you can go to newlifeforkokomo.org. All of our messages are archived online there. But in part three of our comeback story series, I want you to know this. I want you to know that it is never too late. It's never too late to make a comeback. It's never too late. You're not too far gone. You can have a comeback story, and it can be powerful. Well, today we're going to look at a story in the Old Testament, in the book of Judges, chapter 13, 14, 15. It goes on for a little while. But we're going to look at the story of a man named Samson. And maybe you might remember Samson from Sunday school and your flannel graphs. Y'all remember flannel graphs? Yeah? Maybe you saw Samson. He had long hair and probably built like he was hulked out, you know? But let's look at the story of Samson, Judges chapter 13, verse 1. It says, "Again, the Israelites did evil in the eyes of the Lord." Now, I want to give you a little bit of context for where we're at in the scriptures here. The book of Judges sounds a lot like this seems like every new kind of series in the book of Judges, it starts like this. "And Israel did evil in the eyes of the Lord. And then God raised up for them someone that would try to save them, what they called a judge or a prophet. This person would help lead Israel back to victory, in other words, back to God. And then there'd be a shift in the timeline. And then Judges would again say, and Israel did evil in the eyes of the Lord." And so the book of Judges is this constant cycle of Israel turning from God and worshiping idols, and then finally find themselves in such a low spot that they cry out to God, God answers and brings them to salvation, and then they do evil and they worship other idols, and then God saves them, and it's just like you read it and you're like reading your own life, basically. And so here it is again, the Israelites have done evil in the eyes of the Lord. So the Lord delivered them into the hands of the Philistines for 40 years. The Philistines were these big bad neighbors of the Israelites, by which Goliath would come one day. And the Philistines really, they exemplify Israel's greatest enemy of the whole story of Israel. The Philistines are their greatest enemy. So because that they have turned from God and they've worshiped other idols and they've forgotten the Lord, the Lord has handed them over to their greatest enemy, the Philistines, for 40 years. A certain man of Zorah named Manoah from the clan of the Danites had a wife who was childless. She was unable to give birth. The angel of the Lord appeared to her and said, "You are barren and childless, but you are going to become pregnant and give birth to a son. Now see to it that you drink no wine or other fermented drink, and you do not eat anything unclean. You will become pregnant and have a son whose head is never to be touched with a razor, because the boy is to be a Nazarite, dedicated to God from the womb, and he will take the lead in delivering Israel from the hands of the Philistines." So we have this, you can read in Numbers chapter 6, where it talks about the Nazarite vow. The Nazarite vow can be taken by man or woman, it says in Numbers 6, and it is a way that you are basically saying, I'm dedicating my life to the Lord. And the Nazarite vow has three parts. Obviously, the one part of the Nazirite vow is I will not cut my hair for the length of my vow. And some of you, I don't know if you are on the Nazirite vow or not, but I can tell you're trying your best. I know. I can see. You're not alone either. But no razor. They would not cut their hair. And the second part of the Nazirite vow was that they would stay away from dead things. So while you, if you've taken a vow, a Nazirite vow, some people do it for a period of time. And in Numbers chapter 6 says, even if one of your parents passes away, you have to stay away. If not, then you would have to cut your hair and start anew. That was the vow you're making. So you can't cut your hair. You have to stay away from dead things. And the third thing is that you cannot drink anything that would cause you to be intoxicated. So no fermented drink. So whether it be wine or beer or whatever, if it can be intoxicating, you're staying abstinent from those things. And so abstaining from anything that intoxicates, staying away from anything that is dead, which symbolizes sin, because sin is death and separation. So it's symbolic that I'm staying away from dead things. Not cutting your hair is an outward sign that I have taken this vow. And obviously, as the locks begin to grow, it kind of symbolizes God's authority covering you. And so this was Samson. He was born to be a Nazirite. In Judges 13:24 says, the woman then gave birth to a boy, named him Samson. And he grew, and the Lord blessed him, and the Spirit of the Lord began to stir him. Now, the purpose of Samson's birth, if you remember, was that God was going to strengthen Samson. He was going to be set apart with this Nazirite vow, and God was going to use him in delivering Israel from whom? The Philistines. The purpose of his life was to help deliver Israel from the Philistines who were oppressing them. So in Judges chapter 14, verse 1, it says that Samson went down to Timnah, and he saw a young Philistine woman. When he returned, he said to his father and mother, I have seen a Philistine woman. He says, now get her for me as my wife. As you can imagine, this troubled his father and mother. Imagine his mother recalling the day the angel of the Lord appeared before me and said, you are barren and childless, but you are about to have a son, and he is going to become the deliverer of your people from the Philistines. And then that boy comes home and says, I saw me a Philistine woman, and I'm going to marry her. You can see how this seems problematic for his purpose. You see, if you allow feelings to drive your life, it becomes incredibly problematic for purpose. So what's going to happen here? This doesn't seem like it's going well. His father and mother replied, isn't there an acceptable woman among your relatives or among our people? Must you go to the uncircumcised Philistines to get a wife? Well, Samson and his fellow people of Israel, currently under oppression by the Philistines, one of historically Israel's greatest enemies, he is now being drawn and being tempted by this woman. Not by her, by his own desire. Let me clarify. And although Samson, he was blessed with empowerment, with strength, he would go on to make a series of very foolish decisions. His choices would lead to his spiritual and physical downfall. Let's continue in the story, Judges 14, verse 5. Samson went down to Timnah together with his father and mother. As they approached the vineyards of Timnah, suddenly a young lion came roaring towards him. The Spirit of the Lord came powerfully among him so that he tore the lion apart with his bare hands. I mean, if that's a gift of the Spirit, it missed me, okay? It says he tore it by his bare hands as he might have torn a young goat, which would have been, I always envisioned it like by the jaw. I don't know why I always thought that, like, grab. But actually, it would be by the hind legs that he tore it in half. I don't know if that's any easier, but that's pretty wild. Verse 8, sometime later, when he went back to marry her, the Philistine woman, he turned aside and looked at the lion's carcass, and he saw a swarm of bees and some honey. He scooped out the honey with his hands, and he ate it as he went along. When he joined his parents, he gave them some, and they too ate it, but he did not tell them that he had taken the honey from the lion's carcass. This is an odd part of the story if you don't know the context. You'd be like, that, first of all, weird, right? I don't know if I would ever eat anything out of a rotting carcass. But also, when we understand the vow that he took a vow as a Nazirite not to cut his hair, stay away from dead things, and stay away from intoxicating drink. And yet here he is, taking a scoop of something sweet from this dead carcass of a lion. Thereby, he would have violated his covenant and would have had to, what, shave his head and start anew. But he doesn't. It's interesting that some things we get away with because people can't see it. They can see his hair. Oh, he's made a decision for the Lord. Look at his hair. But what they don't see is what they can't see when nobody's looking. And this was a test of his integrity. So this again is showing Samson's poor decision making. As one who had taken the Nazirite vow, he shouldn't be touching anything that is dead. But something sweet was just too much to resist for the man. A temporal sensation won over his godly dedication. So following this, Samson had a feast. And it says that he had a feast as was customary for young men. He had this feast. Where was he? He went down to see his wife, this woman. So he's with the Philistines. He throws a feast that is customary among young men that are Philistines. And most scholars believe there's a little bit of this going on at the feast, which is a part of his covenant with the Lord, that no fermented drink would touch his lips. But it's safe to assume that at this feast, it's a little partying going on at this feast. So Samson essentially, while he's at this feast, he makes a bet with his friends. Well, first of all, it says he went down, he threw a party, and then he chose 30 people to be his friends. Isn't that kind of weird? If we're going to be friends, I think it's going to be mutual. But he says he chose 30 companions. You be my friend, you're going to be my friend, you're going to be my friend, you're going to be my 30 of them. And then he essentially makes a bet with his friends. And the bet is this: I'm going to give you a riddle and 7 days to solve it. And if you come back within 7 days with the answer to this riddle, I will give you 30 sets of clothes. And they're like, okay. So he gives them this riddle. And the riddle is, out of the eater, something to eat. Out of the strong, something sweet. And we all know what he's referring to. They would have had no idea. It's an impossible riddle to solve if you don't know about the lion and the carcass and the honey. After 3 days, his new chosen friends were completely stumped. So they devised the plan to convince Samson's Philistine wife to lure him to give her the answer to the riddle. Of course, they threatened her that they would kill her family and herself if she doesn't do such a thing. So she was highly motivated. So she goes and she throws herself at Samson, sobbing and crying. She would say things like this, "You hate me." He's like, "Baby, I don't hate you. Why would you say that? You don't love me. What are you talking about? Babe, I love you. Babe, I came down for Israel for you, babe. I saw you, I went home, I told my parents, I saw a Philistine woman. What are you talking about?" He's drinking a protein shake, probably. "You hate me. You don't love me." She cried like this persistently for the entire 7 days. And on the last day, Samson had had enough. Not had enough like, "You know what, woman, just get out of here." No, he had enough like, "Okay, I'll tell you. Make it stop." Y'all know. And so finally he says he had enough. He told her the answer to the riddle. And then, of course, she ran and told the answer to Samson's 30 chosen friends. The friends came to Samson on the last day of their agreement, and they gave this answer to the riddle. "What is sweeter than honey? What is stronger than a lion?" And of course, when Samson heard the answer to his riddle, impossible riddle, he knew exactly how they got that answer. And he was not happy. His Philistine wife had betrayed him. So he was angry. But he was also going to come through on his agreement that he now owed them 30 sets of clothes. So he goes and gets them. Chapter 14, verse 19, it says, "The Spirit of the Lord came powerfully upon him. He went down to Ashkelon. He struck down 30 men, stripped them of everything that they had, and he gave their clothes to those who had explained the riddle to him. Burning with anger, he returned to his father's home, and he was unaware, but while he went to his father's home in anger, his Philistine wife was given to one of his friends, one of his companions, who attended with him at the feast. So after some time, Samson cools down. The green pigment leaves his skin. And he decided that he would go back down to see his Philistine wife, only to find out that after this previous conflict, that she was given to one of his friends. And again, Samson becomes furious. You're going to see that Samson struggles with something called escalation. He will not calm down. He will have the last word. And if you do something, he will do more. And if you respond, he will go next level and next level. He will not be outdone. This is a really bad way to solve conflict, by the way. Escalation. Not good. So he's furious. Here's chapter 15, verse 4. So he went out. Now imagine he shows up at his Philistine wife's house, knocks on the door. Her father answers, and he's like, "I want to see my Philistine wife." And he's like, "Funny that you mentioned that, because when you left, we were confused and scared, and I gave her to Johnny down the street." So now, he was mad. So he went out, he devised a plan. He went out, and he caught 300 fox. I don't know how you do that, but this took some time. He was dedicated. He caught 300 foxes, tied them together, tail to tail, in pairs. So that's 150 pairs of foxes tied together by the tail. He fastened a torch in every pair of tails, lit the torches, and let the foxes loose in the standing grain of the Philistines. He burned up all the shocks and standing grain together with the vineyards and olive groves. This guy is a maniac. This guy's a maniac. This is crazy. This is in the Bible. The Bible, this is fun. This is fun. Not funny. It's not funny. It'd be like, essentially, Samson went, he burned down all their fields, all their grain. He went and blew up the grocery stores. That's what he did. I'll get you. So now, in response to this attack, they went and killed his Philistine wife and her father. The Philistines did. So, because again, this is affecting more and more people. That's what escalation does. You think that you're solving your problem, you're hurting more people. So the Philistines are like, okay, they kill his Philistine wife and her father. And then Samson goes out and he slaughters many Philistine men before he goes and hides in a cave back in Judah. So the Philistines, they went to Samson's people. They went over to Judah. They told them that they were there for Samson. Imagine the people of Israel and all these Philistines come into like your neighborhood. Like, hey, yo, are we good? What's going on? They're like, no, we're good, but we're here for Samson. And so the Israelite people, basically, we're going to help you with this. So here's how, this is how they do it. This is how his own people knew that this guy was trouble. Samson's own people knew he was trouble. They sent 3,000 men to go get one Samson. 3,000 Israelite men go down to one cave where there is one Samson. And they're like, hey, Samson. We come peacefully. There's 3,000 of us peacefully here. And they tell him, the Philistines, they're in town, and they're looking for you. And we're here to take you. Is that okay? And he makes some promises to him this. As long as you don't kill me yourself, I'll go. And so they tie him up with a brand new rope, and they take him back to town to the Philistines. And here's what happens in verse 14 of the 15th chapter of Judges. As he approached Lehi, the Philistines came toward him shouting. So now the 3,000 men are coming with Samson. And the Philistines see him. Get him! Right? They come shouting. The Spirit of the Lord came upon him. The ropes on his arms became like charred flax, and the bindings dropped from his hands. And then finding a fresh jawbone of a donkey, he grabbed it, and he struck down 1,000 men. Scary, though. And yet, if we thought this was the end of Samson's poor decisions, guess what? He's not done yet. Chapter 16, verse 4 says, sometime later, he fell in love with a woman in the valley of Sorek whose name was Delilah. Delilah's name means low-hanging fruit. In other words, think of it this way. The devil knows the low-hanging fruit that he can tempt you with. And in this valley, was located in between where the Israelites were and the Philistines were, it was middle ground. And so if you're ever just not running hot after God, but you're in the middle ground, in the valley, the devil's there to hang low-hanging fruit. He's like, I'm going to get you. And so this woman, her name was Delilah, the rulers of the Philistines went to her and said, see if you can lure him into showing you the secret of his great strength and how we can overpower him so we may tie him up and subdue him. Each one of us will give you 1,100 shekels of silver. And if you're wondering, that's a lot of money. So they're in their little room and she's trying to lure him into telling her his secret. And then Samson tells her, he says, well, if you tie me up with fresh bowstrings, I will become like any ordinary man. And Samson falls asleep. She ties him up with 7 fresh bowstrings. And then she hollers, "Hurry, quick, the Philistines are here." And he wakes up and he just rips out of the bowstrings. She's like, that wasn't it. "Samson, please tell me the secret of your strength." He's like, "Oh, baby, if you tie me up with new ropes," that sounds weird. "If you tie me up with new ropes that have never been used, I'll become like an ordinary man." So he falls asleep. She ties him up with brand new ropes. "The Philistines are here." Out of the ropes he comes. "If you really love me, Samson, you'll tell me the source of your strength." "Well, baby, here's the thing. If you weave the 7 braids of my hair into a loom, I will become like an ordinary man." So while he sleeps, she weaves his hair into a loom. "The Philistines are here." And sure enough, his strength was there. He's ready to fight. Judges chapter 16, and verse 16, it says, "With such nagging, she prodded him day after day after day until he was sick to death." So he told her, and he told her everything. He said, "No razor has ever been used on my head, because I have been a Nazarite dedicated to God from my mother's womb. And if my head were shaved, my strength would leave me, and I would become weak as any other man." So he falls asleep. She shaves his head. Verse 21, it says, "Then the Philistines seized him, gouged out his eyes, and took him down to Gaza." And here's Samson, weak, eyes gouged, and he's right where he is because of his decisions, because of a series of his own choices. God brought Samson into this world for a purpose, to liberate his people from the Philistines. Instead of fighting them, he played with them. And now he's found himself captive by them. The first thing I want you to think about is God's power. Is it working through me, or is it actually working in me? You see, Samson had the power of God working through his life. He had supernatural strength. It's seemingly clear that Samson was really only concerned about himself, with the regulation of not cutting his hair. He is often found in contact with dead things, not even accidentally, on purpose. He's feasting with the Philistines, and this hardly suggests abstinence from strong drinking. Of these 3 Nazirite vows, these 3 things of the Nazirite vow, only one can be easily seen by others: the long hair. But touching something dead, drinking the wine, could be hidden from everyone except God. So is God's power working through me, or is it working in me? In other words, you can keep external appearances while experiencing hidden failures. Our prayer needs to sound more like this: "God, as much as I have needed your power to defeat the enemy, I need your power to fix me." But that wasn't Samson's prayer. He just thought, I can get away with it. As long as I have long hair, people will think I'm the guy. As long as I still have God's giftings in my life, I'm still the guy. You can keep external appearances while having hidden failures. Number 2, stop holding out and start getting out. Samson thought that he knew how to play the game. He wasn't taken out when he went and got a Philistine wife. He's like, I wasn't taken out. Okay. So I think I'm just going to hold out. He wasn't taken out on the first day of his first bad decision, so he just kept holding out. I'm just going to keep holding out. I'm just going to keep playing the game. But here's all I want you to know. A great collapse doesn't happen in a single choice. It's a series of choices that brings the fall. So what are we holding out for? This is your sign today to get out. What are you holding out for? To see how long you can hold out for? To see how long you can play the game? To see how long you can dabble? Great collapse is coming. I'll say it a different way. Mismanagement over time leads to major collapse. It's true in many areas of our lives. If you mismanage money long enough, collapse. You mismanage your business long enough, collapse. You mismanage your marriage, your children long enough, collapse. I'll say it to you another way, one with hope. It's not too late to get out while you can. Today can be your day to stop holding out and to get out. Get out of that bad relationship. Get out of that bad habit. Get out of the valley where you've been dabbling in. The consequences for Samson were real, but it's not too late. What are you holding out for? Let this be your sign today to get out. Return to the call of God on your life. Return to purpose. Return to God. And in doing so, you can do this. Make a smashing comeback. You can make a smashing comeback. I love this little verse that's kind of hidden here in chapter 16 when it talks about Samson. It's after his head was shaved and they took it and they gouged out his eyes. This is what it says. But the hair on his head began to grow again after it had been shaved. Oh, there's a little, he can't see with his eyes, but he can feel a little stubble coming back. Even though it looked grim, shackled and chained and eyes gouged out, there was a stubble of growth on his head, a sign of hope that even at rock bottom, there was a comeback brewing. In Judges 16, verse 25, while they were in high spirits, this is the Philistines. You can imagine the party they probably threw after finally getting this guy, Samson. They were in high spirits and they shouted, "Hey, bring out Samson to entertain us." So they called Samson out of the prison and he performed for them. And while they stood him among, and when they stood him among the pillars, Samson said to the servant, who held his hand, because again, no eyes. He said, put me where I can feel the pillars that support the temple so that I may lean against them. He's standing in the temple of Dagon, thousands of people there. Scripture says that there are so many people in the temple celebrating the capture of this guy that there was thousands more on the roof of Dagon's temple. Listen to what it says in the 28th verse. Then Samson prayed to the Lord. Sovereign Lord, remember me. Please, God, strengthen me just one more time. Just one more. Remember me. This sounds identical to the prayer of the thief on a cross next to Jesus. Hey, Jesus, remember me. Today you'll see me in paradise. This man was breaths away from eternity, and Jesus says, it's not too late. You'll be with me in paradise. And Samson, gouged out eyes, stubble of growth on his head, says, Sovereign God, remember me. Let's do this one more time. One more time. Maybe someone today needs to pray a prayer like that. God, remember me. And you can start a smashing comeback. Verse 29, then Samson reached toward the two central pillars on which the temple stood, bracing himself against them, his right hand on the one and his left hand on the other. Samson said, Let me die with the Philistines. And then he pushed with all of his might, and down came the temple on the rulers and on all the people in it. Thus he killed many more when he died than when he lived. And God's power came back on him one more time. It wasn't too late. It wasn't too late. And what was Samson's purpose in his life? It was that he would help deliver Israel from the Philistines. Now, he had dabbled away his whole life, but on the day he died, in the collapse of Dagon's temple, would be the beginning of Israel's deliverance. Now, that's pretty close to the end. He almost died, and we probably never would have heard his story. But we know Samson's story because he decided it's not too late. One more time. In my last breath, I'm going to cry out to God. It's never too late. Here's what I want you to know today. It is never too late. You are not too far gone. You are not too old. You're not too far away. And I want you to know that God is always good. God is always good. It's never too late. You're not too far gone. You're not too old. You're not too far away. God is always good. My prayer is that today someone leaves the valley. The valley of low-hanging fruit, the valley of dabbling. Well, I'm not on the other side. I'm just somewhere in the middle. I'm not hot or cold, but you're just a little lukewarm. It's time to get out. Stop holding out. This is your sign today to stop holding out and to get out. Because God has given you greater purpose than to just live selfishly for yourself. He gave you a purpose. And it's never too late. It doesn't matter how much time you've wasted. It doesn't matter how much resources you've wasted. One prayer to God will start the comeback of your life. I don't think there's any marriage too far gone. One cry to God, and God can restore your marriage. One cry to God, and I believe the prodigals will come home. It is never too late. You're not too far gone. You're not too far away. You're not too old. It's never too late because God is always good. Stand to your feet with me this morning. Every head bowed, every eye closed for me. Just you, just God. Are you ready for a comeback? It's never too late. You are not too far gone. The word of the Lord today is that he is still good. And if you are in need, if you are in need of a comeback today, would you just lift your hand right where you are? Just lift it just over your shoulder so I can see. Let me see. Thank you. Thank you. Once you put it up, you can put it down. Thank you. Thank you. Father, right now we cry out to you like Samson. Oh, sovereign Lord, would you remember me? Would you remember me? and strengthen me one more time. And God, won't you do it? Won't you do it? If you're here in this place and you need to take your first step, and that is a step back towards God, you need to invite him into your life. Make him the Lord of your life. I ask you just to pray a prayer in the quietness of your heart. It can sound like mine. It can be in your own words. But just pray, Father, I need you. I've been in the valley. I've been to some dark places that I'd rather not talk about. But I know I need to return back to you. Would you forgive me of all of my failures? Give me the strength to walk a new life. Forgive me. I want you to be Lord of my life. I want my ways to be your ways. If you pray a prayer like that today, all of heaven's rejoicing that you're taking one step back to the Father. And here's the great thing. When you take a step back to the Father, he'll run all the way to meet you. So, Father, I pray that people would feel your loving embrace, that you are a God that is good, grace, and mercy, ready to forgive, ready to restore. And if there's still breath in our lungs, there's still purpose for our life. It's never too late. The worship team is going to sing one last song. As we sing this song, let's just allow the Holy Spirit maybe to bring some conviction to parts of our life. So maybe you need to sing. Maybe you just need to be still and allow the Lord to maybe show areas of your life where you need to stop holding out and you need to get out.